Welcome to Tower Talks with Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast. And now for your weekly recap, a timely review of this week's top headlines and takeaways. Here's your host.
Welcome to Inside Towers Week in Review. I'm Leslie Stimson, Inside Towers Washington Bureau Chief. With me are John Salentano, our business editor, and Jim Fryer, our managing editor. This episode is sponsored by Inside Towers Intelligence. It's a quarterly market report that dives deep into the wireless infrastructure ecosystem. Intelligence looks at market trends, capital expenditures, relevant M&A transactions, and more. The 2024 Volume 1 issue will be available soon. An annual subscription also includes an exclusive briefing and online support. For more information or to subscribe, visit insidetowers.com/intelligence. Well, John, you had an exciting trip to Metro Connect.
I did. These conferences come back to back, so you barely get to repack your suitcase. But it was held an annual event. It's actually it's been running now for over 20 years. And it's unlike the industry trade shows that we usually attend. This is primarily an investor conference and brings together companies that are in the digital infrastructure business, you know, tower companies, fiber, data center operators, small cell players, and their equipment suppliers, and they all meet with their investors. And so the themes are a little bit different than what we might normally hear at an industry trade show. These are more forward-looking and trying to give the audience an idea of where we're going from here, what the current state of the industry is. So one of the big themes, and by the way, this was down in Florida, and I appreciated getting some February sun while attending the conference. But one of the big themes of this year's session was the impact of AI on telecommunications, and certainly the impact in data centers, where it became very clear and was echoed more than once that the data centers are expanding very rapidly to accommodate the projected demand for capacity and processing of AI applications. And so you can build it if you have the space, and you can build it with the equipment that's available. But the real Achilles heel here is power. A lot of the power utilities are finding they can't meet the demand, for at least in the short term, for the amount of power required to run these data centers to accommodate all these artificial intelligence applications. So that's becoming more of an issue. And what we're seeing as a result are the data center companies are looking to establish new locations outside of metro areas where they have space and where they can get power. So that was a big point of reference in the conference. Mark Ganzi, the CEO of Digital Bridge, delivered the keynote speech, and he echoed that. He said, "Look, this is a big deal. The projection curves, they look like hockey sticks, but they keep getting steeper every year." But he made the point also that, look, we're very early in this process. His analogy was to a baseball game. He said, "We're just in the first inning. This is a long-term secular trend that we're going to that'll run for the next decade." But his point was, we need to start planning for it now. We need to start investing for it now, and that it's going to continue in its various flavors and versions, and also that it impacts all facets of digital infrastructure. The data centers are the primary impact, but then you need big pipes to connect data centers together. Mm-hmm. And to run the internet, so that impacts on the fiber networks. And by the way, all this processing takes place in a data center, but its real delivery is at the edge, either on smartphones or mobile devices or fixed devices. So the point he was making was that, it's all the ecosystem of digital infrastructure is all interconnected, and it's all affected. And in effect, the tide will rise all boats. So he was very optimistic about the outlook for the industry. acknowledging there we're in a bit of a slowdown and a bit of a lull in terms of the pace of building out the network. But he said the indicators are there, the drivers are in place, and really we need everybody to build that into their plans, step up with their spending and investment in accommodating, having this ecosystem available to accommodate the projected demand from the consumer and business end user. So, there was a variety of topics that covered different subsets of the digital infrastructure, from the fiber guys to. There was not so much discussion on towers, interestingly enough, but certainly fiber and data centers were big themes this year.
Well, thank you for that comprehensive wrap-up. We now go to the AT&T outage, which lasted several hours one morning recently. And I can't even remember the day it was at this point. And they said, AT&T said it was the result of a software update gone wrong as they were expanding their network. And T-Mobile and Verizon said, well, it's not us, but if your call has to go through one of their switches or something, it might affect you. But the big concern was the AT&T subscribers, many of them couldn't reach 911. And authorities were saying, use your landline or get a neighbor to help you, someone who doesn't have AT&T. And it's like, oh. So there's now a bunch of the federal agencies are investigating it. And Jim, you did a piece. The New York Attorney General is looking into this too.
Right, this will be running Friday, Leslie, and it was also a little bit comical as you sat through that in the morning as that all was going on and all the kind of mass hysteria that it was, the Chinese malware invasion or that it was solar flares and there are all kinds of things being trotted out when it was. Turns out to be just kind of a tech problem that got resolved. Thank goodness that it wasn't something greater. But we kind of let the hysteria subside a little bit before we put out a bulletin on it that day. But it wasn't until after we kind of people sort of got a handle on it and the outages started getting taken care of. But net result is that this is running in Friday's issue that. The New York Attorney General, Letitia James, whose name has been out in the media lately, that she is going to be investigating the outages and for customers in New York that were affected. And she's going to be looking at the causes and AT&T's response to the service disruption and encouraging all affected New Yorkers to file complaints. And they even posted a link, and we'll post it in Friday's issue on if you are a New Yorker and were affected and you want to complain, you can go on that link. Attorney General James said that Americans rely on cell service providers for consistent and reliable service to help them with nearly every aspect of their daily lives, and that it's critical we protect consumers when an outage occurs. So, maybe you could, you might be able to recoup as much as $5, which seems to be what they're offering as compensation for this. So, stay tuned as that develops, and we'll see what New York State has to say about it.
Thank you,
I
Jim.
think it's interesting that AT&T and the other carriers as well are moving their core network, the core of their network, to the cloud, right? AT&T has a, and we wrote about it a while ago, they have an agreement with Microsoft Azure that all their core network functions are now uploaded to data centers and operate in the cloud, as opposed to, the big switching centers that they had historically to route calls across the network. So, you know, much of the new features and functions on the network are going to be in software. And I don't want to throw up a red flag here, but you know, in some respects, we're dealing with a different type of operating environment that is susceptible to bugs and to glitches or misprogramming. So it could happen again, and it could happen on anybody's network because the other guys have taken the same approach in terms of virtualizing the core of their network. And so that does create some susceptibilities. The trick is to be highly diversified and redundant enough that you don't affect across the whole network, that you might affect just a small area if something like this happens again. But I got to believe they're not going to let this happen again if they can avoid it. But it's also interesting too, Jim, to note that, you know, AT&T's headquarters used to be in New York City, right? Years ago. Now it's in Texas. But can you imagine if it was still in New York, what kind of heat they would be getting from the Attorney General?
Yeah.
It was spread out all over the country, pretty much, in the sort of the major cities. So, but it was, you know, didn't permeate every little nook and cranny of the country. Mm-hmm. The major got affected and disrupted, and inconvenience was the main problem. But
yeah.
So, New Street Research called the outage the biggest news of the week affecting telecom stocks. And several agencies like Department of Homeland Security, FBI, and the FCC are investigating the outage. New Street Research policy advisor Blair Levin said, you know, there could be different outcomes from all these federal investigations, but he said the most important response is to consumer perception. He said the wireless companies often market against their rivals on competing claims of which network performs best. After a day of problematic stories with more to follow, we think the brand damage to AT&T will end up being more costly than anything the government chooses to do. But he said, whatever the government response, there could be a market impact. Many consumers no longer have a wireline backup. Remember, during the outage, people were being advised to use the landline or go to your neighbor. If they're not on AT&T, use their phone. He said, while there will be an investigation, we are doubtful the FCC will do anything material to the stocks based on harm to consumers. He said, the challenge for the commission, if it thinks AT&T did anything wrong, would be to find the right incentives to make sure it doesn't happen again. You know, it will examine whether AT&T lived up to a standard of care necessary to ensure that 911 calls can be made mm-hmm. without any outages. So the other big story, regulatory-wise, was a former FCC chairman, Charlie Ferris, died on February 16th. He was 90 years old. He's remembered for starting the deregulation of the telecom, broadcast, cable, and satellite TV industries during his chairmanship. He said at the time, the public interest was often better served by a competitive marketplace rather than government regulators trying to be a referee. He was nominated to the FCC post by President Jimmy Carter, and the Senate confirmed him in 1977. He held the post until 1981. His tenure, quote, transformed how the FCC does business. That was according to a broadcast and media scholar, Reed Smith, writing for a publication called The Journal of Radio and Audio Media. One of the things he did was immediately change the hours of the staffed work. He used to clock out at 4:30. He changed that to 5:30 because he felt that would better serve the public. But when he got there, he found himself in charge of an agency that was widely seen as sluggish and beholden to special interests and dominated by lawyers, which it still kind of is. He hired economists, and he argued that unless regulations were improving the market, they were nothing but a nuisance. Under his direction, the commission removed rate regulations on telephone equipment, and it paved the way for consolidation between the telephone and computer industries. He allowed AT&T to enter the computer field through a subsidiary. The agency was credited with helping to encourage a cable TV boom by eliminating restrictions on programming and satellite use. He eliminated paperwork requirements for local radio broadcasters. He simplified the licensing procedure for new radio stations, and he helped women and minorities qualify for broadcast station ownership. FCC Commissioner Jeffrey Stark said Chairman Ferris's career in public service is, quote, an inspiration, and his leadership of the commission during the Carter administration laid the groundwork for so many of the technological advances of the past 40 years. It is also fitting that we remember Chairman Ferris in February, Black History Month. Chairman Ferris will be missed, but the positive impact he had had on the country and so many will not be forgotten. Once he left the FCC, he spent 14 years on Capitol Hill. At one point, he was general counsel to then House Speaker Thomas Tip O'Neill Jr. He's also credited with helping to write the Civil Rights Act of 1964. He ended up at the Mintz Law Firm, which has now got a really long name. He became of the Mintz Washington office and helped launch its communication practice, remaining with the firm until he retired in 2013.
Interesting guy.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Very, very interesting because the agent, you know, the FCC used to be seen as a real backwater place. And then right around the time of the Telecom Act, it became quite active. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a wrap. Thank you for listening to Inside Towers Week in Review. And for a complete rundown of all the week's stories, check out our Saturday edition.
Thank you for listening to Tower Talks. To subscribe to our podcast, our daily newsletter, or use our other industry resources, please visit InsideTowers.com. Until next time, you've been listening to Tower Talks from Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast.